You are listening to The Nature of Things on WRVO. This essay first aired on October 12, 2001.
The harvest moon has come and gone. As is often the case, it had at least one night of spectacular brilliance that reminds us of its traditional role in agrarian societies. The harvest moon, because of its early ascendance in the autumn sky, provides an extension of daylight conditions. It was welcomed over the centuries by farmers eager to get their crops harvested. Full moons have found their place in our rural folklore. They were used as icons for everything from worship to when to plant and harvest crops. Songs, poems, and rituals have celebrated, if not cultivated, this strange fascination. The harvest moon is followed almost 30 days later by the hunter's moon. It, too, rises early in the evening so that it reaches its zenith in time to ameliorate the effect of the setting sun. The moon is more than an icon. The depth of its influence on the natural world may be disputed, but the moon has figured in some important research on bird migration. When I was in high school, I remember reading about studies of the relative abundance of birds observed flying across the light disk presented by the full moon. Using a 10 to 20 power telescope whose field encompasses the full disk, it is possible to count and even plot the direction of night migrating birds. A decade or so later, G.H. Lowry developed a mathematical approach to counting and charting these moon crossings. Some invertebrates and fishes follow reproductive patterns based on lunar cycles and tidal movements. Best known is the strange behavior of the grunion, a small fish which resembles a smelt. In the few days following full and new moon at high tide, grunion invade the beaches of Southern California and the Baja Peninsula to spawn. It's a spectacular mass invasion. The most impressive examples of extraterrestrial influences on animal life here on Earth is their role in initiating migration and reproductive patterns. First, fluctuations in day length have been demonstrated to trigger reproductive cycles or stimulate hormone production. Examples of this are almost kingdom-wide. Second, migrants use the stars to navigate at night. With some species, overcast skies can cause complete disorientation that might result in the cessation of migration. Such a phenomenon occurred in Chenango County about 30 years ago. It was in spring, and a particularly well-developed inversion produced unusually dense clouds and fog. This cloud mass extended above the freezing level, and thousands of waterfowl, including about 100 swans, dropped into the rain-swollen Chenango River flats. The huge swans captured the most public attention, but I remember seeing phenomenal numbers of horned grebes and widgeon, too. Foggy conditions persisted for several days, and the swans, at first concentrated in one large flock, broke into smaller groups and foraged in diverse local ponds and wetlands. At that time, I was director of the Rogers Center at Sherburn. During the week to 10 days that followed, many local nature photographers brought in their pictures to show me. I remember sitting in my office with Zira Cohn, a banker from Oxford, New York, viewing some spectacular photos of swans, resting, taking flight, and circulating. Zira was treasurer of the Mid-York Conservation Fund, Rogers' nonprofit support group. Response to an exhibit featuring these photos showed us that this unusual weather and its bonanza of waterfowl caught the fancy of many Chenango Valley inhabitants. Getting back to extraterrestrial influences on nature, a number of ingenious experiments have demonstrated that birds are able to use the stars at night and the sun during the day for some pretty sophisticated navigation. Some experimenters have even used planetaria to duplicate unseasonal conditions and elicit unseasonal but appropriate responses from birds. There is probably no way to determine whether celestial navigation alone can bring birds unerringly to their home acres. It is usually presumed that landmarks are also critical in fine-tuning the final approach. The thought that has intrigued me is the realization that the bird's computer has not only to adjust to the time of year and the time of day, but it also has to have evolved over the years. Tonight's sky is not the same as the one that guided the great flights of passenger pigeons. I wonder if today's migrators, exposed to the sky of the early 1800s, would know how to adjust. It wouldn't surprise me to find that someone has already investigated that. Well, that's all I have for today. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.